Hi, everybody.
Hi.
My name is Ed Keith, and I guess I am a recovering human being. AA means a great deal to me. It gives me some degree of sobriety, and I think you would have to admit, being here this weekend, that I would have to be fairly sober to put up with all the abuse I put up with around here. I just heard a story recently that I think you can tell any woman friend of yours who has a husband who drinks. This lady went to a pet shop and she said, I want an animal, a vicious animal of some kind. And the man said, well, I've got this dog here who has a reputation for being a terribly vicious dog. And she looked at him and she said, no, that's not what I have in mind. I want something more than that. And he said, well, I've got this African little animal that's very exotic, and he has a reputation for being very, very vicious and mean and protective and so forth. And she looked at him and she said, no, that's still not what I'm looking for. And he said, well, I just got something in, something that's brand new. Let me show you this. He took her in the back room, and here was a strange-looking bird. Small body with a great big head and a tremendous beak. And he said, this is called a crunch bird. He said, this may be what you're looking for. She said, well, it looks kind of harmless. What does it do? And he says, I'll show you. And he put the bird down on the floor. And he said, crunch bird, my chair. And a little crunch bird wobbled over this chair with a great big beak, went whoosh, and just busted that chair all to pieces. And she said, now watch this. And he said, crunch bird, my table. And a little bird wobbled over the table, and a great big bear went crunch and just busted that table in a million pieces. He said, that's what I want. That's what I've been looking for. And he said, well, all right, I'll sell it to you, but tell me, what in the world do you want with a thing like this? And she says, well, my husband comes home drunk every night, and I'm going to take that crunch bird home with me, and I'm going to have him in the hall, the front hall, and he's going to come in, he's going to be drunk, and he's going to say, what the hell is that? And she said, I'm going to say in a sweet voice, well, that's a crunch bird. He's going to say, crunch bird my butt. If you know anybody, you know who's like a neat thing like that, that might be a help. I'm going to start in a minute, and I'm going to be brief because I have learned that if you don't have a great deal to say, at least you don't have to take a long time to say it. So if you plan to start listening, I suggest you do it right away because it's going to be over pretty fast. I want to take an ancient story that everyone has heard, but I'm going to give it a new twist, and And I say, bear with me because you've all heard this story. Concerns the guy who went to an old friend and asked for a rather sizable personal loan at very little interest. And the man says, I'm sorry, I just can't see my way clear to giving you this loan because our friendship just doesn't merit it. And the guy says, how could you say that? How can you say a thing like that? How can you, even if our present friendship doesn't matter, how can you forget our growing up together and the many hours we spent together and the good friends that we were? How can you forget the time I saved you from drowning? Or how can you forget the times that I spent hours with you, helping you, coaching you in math? Or how about the months that I spent convincing my cousin to marry your brother? How can you forget all of these things, the devotion that we have had for each other over the years? In fact, it was I that got you this job that you now have. And the man waved his hand and said, oh, I know all about that. And I remember all of that, but what concerns me is, what have you done for me lately? Now, this is the thought that we all know somebody like this, and it's kind of a cynical commentary on life. But I should like to take that little instance and turn it a little bit and maybe help us to see something. This, to me, is a commentary about life. This is the way life is. For no matter what we do or how many things we have accomplished, how good we have been, When we point to our achievements of the past, life has a habit of saying to us, I understand all that, but what have you done for me lately? What have you done for me today? Or what have you done with me? What have you done with me today? It would seem that life is jealous of yesterday. It doesn't care one bit about what we have done, or who we have been, or what we have accomplished. It still has a way of demanding its own rights, refusing to let us rest on any laurels, constantly clamoring for our attention to the now, right this minute. Now, this is true of life, and I think it's also true of our relationship with God, the God of our understanding. You know, I hear us talk about in AA what God has meant to us, and how much God, the God of my understanding, has done for me. And I sometimes am a little concerned that maybe people think in terms of their relationship to God as being a static thing. You know, once it's established, that's it, forever. And this is just not true. It's just not true. It's like the man, it's like life. Remember, I want to use an illustration out of the big, big book, as Willard says. I've never heard that expression before, and I will use it many, many times, with your permission, sir. Remember in the book of Exodus, the story of Israel's journey to the wilderness. In that wilderness experience, remember, after they got there a little while, they'd forgotten what it was like back in Egypt. And things got rough, and things got difficult, and they didn't have any food. Food was very scarce. And they were complaining and griping about this. In fact, they were starving, many of them. And one morning, all over the ground appeared a strange-looking white substance that remained after the dew was gone in a sort of a flake-like, crusty material. And they realized, someone tried it, and they realized that this was good to eat, and it tasted very good. It was like bread with honey on it. We know now that there are a lot of plants in that particular area of Mount Sinai that could have produced this particular thing, but it still doesn't undercut the explanation of its presence. However it came to be there, it was bread from heaven to them. They called it manna. And the word manna has remained as a symbol of the providential mercy of God coming to somebody when it was needed. But notice there was another peculiar thing, a very interesting thing about this manna that has value in it for all of us. It has value for them and it has value for us. It wouldn't keep. There was always more than enough, but it wouldn't keep from one day to the next. They had to gather it each day for that day. And some of them found this out the hard way, of course. They decided, man, there's enough here, you know, I can gather it and put it in some boxes or some baskets or something, and then I can take it easy the rest of the week and until this is gone. But they found out that the next day it had worms and it was unfit to eat. And so they realized they had to get it every single day. It was like AA, a 24-hour affair. It may have been the first time that 24 hours a day was discovered by somebody. Yesterday's manna could not be used for today. It couldn't be stored up. It was there every morning, and the people could use it all that day for that 24-hour period, but early the next morning they had to get out and get it again. Now, we can't make this analogy crawl on all fours, but I cannot help but think that there is a way in which our relationship to God is just like that manna and like 24 hours a day. Every day it's a brand new experience. It's a brand new adventure. Not so much in the matter of our beliefs, but in the matter of our response to these beliefs. In the realm of experiencing God as we understand Him, we have got to learn that yesterday's manna won't get it. It will not get it. It's got to be something we do today. Every day brings its new challenge. Every morning, the person that is within us has to be up and at it again. Every homemaker ought to cherish the advice that a great old lady gave a young bride one time. She said, "Child, And I know how difficult housework is, so I appreciate this. I watch Ann do it a great deal and see how tiring it is. But she said, child, housework won't get you down if you remember to make up your mind in advance that you're never going to get caught up. Just when you think everything is slick and polished and shining and beautiful and you start to gloat, just remember, at that very moment, sheets are a-wrinkling, dust is a-settling, and stomachs are getting ready all over again. If you can just remember that, it won't get you down. This is, it seems to me, an appropriate, if homely, warning for our relationship with the God of our understanding. Our faith cannot gloat, it cannot rest, it cannot lean on its laurels. This is one of the dangers that we have to constantly watch, I believe. The feeling that we are established, that we have a relationship with God that cannot be broken, that nothing can happen to us. That we have banked enough merit, so to speak, we've stored up enough in the past, that when our lives become ineffective, or when our faith loses some of its excitement, or there's some gaps in our lives, then it's going to be all right, because somehow or other, you know, this that we've got stored up is going to take care of us. This can be a killing conclusion, literally a killing conclusion. Or there is a way in which God is like this man to whom the fellow went to ask for a loan. He just may very well be saying, okay, sure, I understand all that, but what have you done with me today? What have you done with me today? This is where you and I seem to have to continue to make an inventory sheet of our experience that we have to run on ourselves from time to time. It may take a little effort. Maybe no more than the 5 minutes we will have talked about, but it takes a little effort, a little probing of ourselves, by ourselves, but it needs desperately to be done. We need to have some questions asked. We need to ask ourselves some serious questions and be willing to answer them. Questions like, have you recently admitted to yourself that there's some pressing need in the depth of your life that nothing seems to be able to satisfy? The big gap. Or maybe a small gap, but nothing seems to satisfy it. Have you felt your helplessness lately in the face of some personal need? Things like this. Each person will have to fill in the blank with the exact description of what his need is. Most of the time, and this is a strange phenomenon of our life, but most of the time the people that live with us and love us can't see this going on in us. Else they would not ask, what's the matter? But this is what we say to each other. What's the matter? What's wrong? We can't see this going on in ourselves. But we can see it. We can see it if we're willing to look closely enough. Someone's conscience may be jammed like an automobile horn that's stuck and blaring away long after the cause for it, the sound is gone. Someone may be hung up there. Someone may have a need for a faith that will let him forgive himself long after God has forgiven him and he still can't forgive himself. Or it might be something quite the opposite from this. Something that someone else may be able to take in stride but is slowly poisoning you. You need to get rid of it. Or it may be one of the little foxes of the heart, the deadly thing that we sometimes ignore, disastrously ignore, things like self-indulgence, envy, resentment. You know, a little bit of resentment is like being a little bit pregnant. You do just that much. No such thing as a little bit of resentment. And all of these are, in some measure, in all of us, one of these may just be demanding in somebody's life more room than the thing deserves. And maybe we ought to be able to know that about ourselves or see it about ourselves. Or it may be that someone's need is simply for some assurance that life is worth it. Some assurance that I can get from today to tomorrow. that there are in this trouble-ridden world causes and ideas and possibilities that can be believed to be worthwhile and can be surrendered to as worth serving. This may be where a person is. The list can go on. Now, each of us knows where it has touched him or where it can touch him. And the master clue to a real relationship with the God of our understanding is to admit our helplessness before such a need as this, and then to do something about it. And we need to go right on, it seems to me, trying to bring to grip this thing with the God of our understanding. You know, this is one of the things that I have learned the hard way, and I see so many people not being able to do it. We say over here, we believe in God, the God of our understanding. It means so much to us. And we've got this problem that's tearing our guts out over here. And we've never thought to bring these two things together. And yet this is what it's all about. We know what God can do for us. And here we have this thing that we're struggling and straining with. And somebody has to help us to see you. Put those two things together. Put those two things together. Something can happen. Never really occurs to some people to do that, to combine these two things for health. We grow accustomed to the nagging of our needs. We get used to ourselves the way we are. We say, maybe this is the way it has to be. So many of us never quite get around to trying to bring our needs and the God of our understanding together. And seldom do we really expect anything to happen if we did. All of us have times in our lives when we know that our relationship with God has helped us in the midst of a basic need, a simple basic need or a profound basic need. We've all had experiences like this. Everyone can point to a time when God has moved into my life, stepped into my life, and done something with my life. We all had this. But this thing is hard to sustain. It's hard to keep working. It's hard to keep going at. The principles of Alcoholics Anonymous have never claimed to be a bag of tricks for the mass production of triumphant personalities. But if it is anything, it is the truth that brings energy and force and power to bear on the needs of hard-pressed people like you and me. And the most important question for us always is, are we really trying to discover what a fresh, new rededication of our lives to the God of our understanding can do for us now, not yesterday or next week, but what could it do for us right this minute? This could be what is out of focus in someone's life right now. This could be what God is waiting for. Because as Willard says, and I heartily agree, he waits. He's not a rude person. He doesn't break into conversations in my life. And he doesn't do things to me when I don't ask him to. He waits. And he may just very well be waiting for somebody at this time for an answer to the question,